The following live presentation by Rabbi David Aaron is brought to you by Israelite, inspiring a renaissance in Jewish living. To learn more about Israelite, please visit our website at www.israelite.org. Additional contact information is available at the end of this presentation. Thank you for learning with Israelite and enjoy the experience.
Now, a number of years ago, believe it or not, I was working as a security guard. Now get that. Mean David Aaron. Got a job as a security guard when I was in high school, quite a number of years ago. And I had to wear the old security hat with a pants with a stripe down the side and a nice light blue shirt that said Pinkerton Security Guard. And I had one of those security hats. And I was on my way home one day wearing my uniform. And I'm standing at the bus station. So I take off my Pinkerton hat, my security hat, and of course underneath it is my kippah. And at that time I had this beautiful kippah with white roses on it, and my name, Dave, on it. It was just myself and this American who was standing at the bus station with me. And he looks at me and he kind of like starts to chuckle. And I don't know what he's laughing at, but he's kind of going like this. And I see that he wants to say something to me, but he's feeling very uncomfortable. Finally, he gets the courage and he walks up to me and he says, excuse me, sir, but the lining of your hat stayed on your head. I said, I beg your pardon. He said, the lining on your hat stayed on your head. So I didn't know what he was talking about because I forgot I had this, you know. I went, oh, thank you, and I put my hat on. Anyways, so tonight I want to talk not about the lining of my hat, but I want to talk about perspectives. I want to talk about how you can look at something in one way, and it looks quite normal, and yet you could look at something, the same thing in another way, and it looks quite abnormal and actually very funny. And so tonight I want to talk about the road to paradise, which can be a very humorous road, can be a very difficult road, but it's a road through various worlds. And so tonight I want to talk to you about a very famous story. It's in the Gemara, I believe it's in Chagiga. It's about the four rabbis who entered into Pardes. Pardes is very often translated as paradise. And these four rabbis were Ben Azai, Ben Zoma, Acher, and Rabbi Akiva. And these four rabbis decide that they're going to enter into Pardes, into this higher realm. And just before they took this trip, Rabbi Akiva turned to his traveling partners and said, when we get to the pure marble, don't say water, water. Now, I don't know if you know the end of the story. It's not such a happy ending. Because what happened is Ben Azai died. He couldn't deal with what he experienced in the world of Pardes. Ben Zoma went insane. And Elisha Ben Abuya, who's referred to as Acher, became a heretic. And thereby was given the name Acher. Only Rabbi Akiva entered in peace and descended and exited in peace. So I want to talk about this trip. I want to understand, where did they go? How do you get there? I want to understand what it is that Rabbi Akiva knows that his traveling partners somehow did not know. And I want to try and figure out, what is this pure marble? And what's wrong with saying water, water? And why does it cause one person to die, another to go crazy, another to become a heretic? And only Rabbi Akiva was able to come out. Now, I cannot guarantee what you will feel when you come away from this class. Some people might go crazy. Some people might chas v'sholom. I don't want to tell you, but you've come to this class at your own risk. Okay? So I just want a disclaimer, because I understand nowadays there's insurance and Israelite has insurances, but we are not covered till Pardes. So I hope that you can bear with me, and good luck. Okay, so I want to talk about the four worlds. I want to talk about the four worlds. According to Kabbalah, there are four worlds. Four levels of consciousness. The lowest world is referred to as the world of action, asiya. The next world is called the world of yitzira, formation. The next world after that is the world called bria, which is the world of creation. And then the ultimate world, which we generally talk about, there's actually one beyond that, but we don't really so much talk about that. Our insurance certainly doesn't cover that one. But that is the world of atzilut, the world of emanation. So we have the world of action, formation, creation, and emanation. And this was the journey of these rabbis. The Arizal, Rav Isaac Luryeh, one of our great Kabbalists, tell us that these rabbis decided that they would journey to the world of creation. And I want to talk about that journey. I want to talk about what happens when you get to the world of creation. But I first want to talk about what worlds are in general. Now, you might be familiar with the term olam. The word olam comes from the word ne'elam, which means to disappear or to be concealed. An olam is a dimension of concealment. It is a dimension of hiddenness. When we refer to Hashem as Melech Ha'olam, King of the Universe, what we're actually hinting here, God is the King of Hiddenness. And really, each world is a graduating level of hiddenness. Going from top to bottom, you are talking about worlds that are becoming increasingly more and more hidden. And what is more hidden. And we live in the lowest world. Well, I don't want to say we, I do, but I can't include everybody here. But the world of Asiya is the world that is most hidden. And the truth, the ultimate truth, is most hidden in this world. As we ascend into the world of formation, a little less hidden, a little more revealed. And as we reach into the world of creation, a little less hidden, a little more revealed. Okay? And so these worlds are various levels of hiddenness. But what is God hiding? What is hidden behind this world? What's hidden behind this world is God. That's what the Kabbalah teaches us. Who is God hiding? God is hiding himself. God is hiding his oneness. And since we're in the world where there's the greatest amount of hiddenness and concealment, we don't see God's oneness. We look around the world, we look around this room, and we see multiplicity. We see tremendous amount of plurality. And not only plurality, but separateness. And there's a feeling that in the room there are a bunch of separate individuals in this room. But if we were to ascend into the higher realms, these higher, more revealed levels of consciousness, then we would become more and more aware how although we are very distinct, we are one. And so what is God hiding? God is hiding himself. God is hiding his oneness. And from whom is God hiding his oneness? From you and me. The soul. And this is quite a remarkable idea, which I don't want to really go into too much depth, because it's a very serious idea, that essentially if the Torah teaches us, and it does, that the soul is a spark of the divine, chelik elokam mima'al, the soul is a divine spark, well, this is really then a bizarre kind of picture. Because that means that God is hiding himself from you, the soul, a spark of the divine. Do you follow this? God is hiding himself, so the words say, in God's oneness, from you, that spark. This is what's referred to in Judaism as yearning to unify, kucha brichu v'shechinte. The Shekhinah, the divine presence, is the immanent divine, the godliness within us. Kutshabrihu, the Holy One, is the godliness beyond us. And the godliness within us is yearning to bond with the godliness beyond us. And the godliness beyond us is yearning to bond with the godliness within us. And even though this is very complex, we are told in Kabbalah this is very simple, it's just that we're complex, and that there's really only one God. But this oneness is manifest in the story between these, so to speak, two aspects of the divine, the inner godliness, the godliness within, the Shekhinah, and the godliness beyond, the Holy One, and the unification of those two aspects of godliness. And so, this idea of the soul looking for God, in this world of hiddenness, God is hidden in this world, and the soul, this spark of divinity, you and I, are looking for God. And this is beautifully expressed in one of Rav Nachman of Breslov's story. It is one of the most incredible stories. I will not tell you the entire story, maybe another time. But the story of Rav Nachman of Breslov, one of his most famous teachings were his stories. He made up these incredible stories. And in these stories, he hid some of the deepest, deepest secrets of Judaism. So here's just a little story. One story is called The King and His Wise Advisor. It's sometimes referred to as The Humble King. And basically, in a very big nutshell, or very small nutshell, the king calls his advisor and says that there is a king. There is a king who is mighty. He calls himself a man of truth. He calls himself a humble person. Now, I don't have a portrait of that king. I have a portrait of all the other kings in the world, except for that one. Because that king is very far, and he's not in his kingdom, but he somehow resides very far away from his kingdom. And I'm asking you to please go find him and draw a portrait of him. And so the wise advisor accepts his mission to find this king. But he realizes in order to find this king in this country, he realizes he needs to know the secret of their humor. Because if you really want to know the truth, it's hidden behind jokes. And you know, sometimes when you can't really say what you really want to say, you say it through a joke. Sometimes when someone has something they really want to communicate to you, but they feel a little uncomfortable, so they actually make these jokes. And you realize, what are they really saying with that joke? And so he realized that to really get to the essence of what this place was all about, he had to really understand their unique humor. And the truth is that every country has a very unique kind of humor, which I'm finding out more and more as I teach in different places in the world, right? That my humor doesn't completely go well in every place in the world. And so he decided that he would study this humor, he would understand this humor, and he went to this country. Well, he gets to this country, and this country is a country that includes all other countries. He gets to the city, but the city which includes all other cities. He gets to this building, which is a building which includes all other buildings. And he gets to a man, and that man includes all other men. Now, according to those who teach us what Rav Nachman is saying, tell us that that country is this world. And it's actually the world of action. The city is the world of formation. The building is the world of creation. And he's ascending through these dimensions, which he can only ascend to through humor, and understanding humor, until he finally gets to this king. And there's a tremendous amount of lies going on, and I don't want to get into all the details, but essentially, he finally gets to the king. The king's hiding behind some curtain. And he says to the king, you know what? I realize now why you're so far away from this world. Because there's so many people lying here. And the reason why you even distance yourself from this world is because you are a king of truth. You are not a king of lies. And therefore you've removed yourself from this kingdom. But I know that you are really a king of truth. Now I understand that's why you're far. And now I know you are great. And he starts praising the king to see if he's truly humble. And as he praises the king and praises the king and praises the king, finally, Rav Nachman says, the king becomes nothing. This is something we talked about a little bit last week. And he can't take it anymore. The king pulls open the curtains and wants to see who is this man who understands him. And at that moment, the advisor painted the picture of the king and brought it back to the king. Now, this is a very unusual Rav Nachman story. I am no expert in Rav Nachman stories, not yet anyways, but this story I heard many, many years ago, and it has been on my mind for years. I think what I'm going to share with you tonight is going to help understand this story, and what's more important, this story is going to help us understand the four who entered into Pardes. What's unusual about this story? What's unusual about this story is there's two kings. Generally, Rav Nachman's stories, there's one king. And of course, who is the king? The king is God, a symbol for God. And then there's a prince or an advisor. And the advisor is the tzaddik, the holy man, or the soul. But what's bizarre about this story is this is a king who's sending his advisor to see another king. Well, who's the other king? It's very unusual for Rav Nachman to have two completely different kings in one story. Well, who's the other king? You see, what Rav Nachman is teaching us over here is essentially the one who has sent you on this journey is the one you're looking for. That's the irony of the story. The king who is sending the soul to find the king, the one who is sending you, is in fact the one that you are looking for. The urge within you to find God is itself an expression of God. You follow this? The urge within you, if you feel an urge to find truth, if you feel an urge to come to a higher place in your life, if you feel an urge to somehow come closer to some ultimate reality, what is the source of that urge? It is a spark of that ultimate reality within you. And the fact that you know that there's something greater than you and yearn to come closer to that which is greater than you is a spark of that greater within you yearning to reconnect. And therefore, Rav Nachman's story, there's two kings. One king perhaps is the king within us, the spark of the king within us, sending us on a journey to find the king beyond us. And there's really only one king. Different expressions of the one king. And so, God is hiding his oneness. And who is God hiding his oneness from? You and I, the soul. A spark of himself within, so to speak. And there's something within us, this godliness within us, which is yearning to reconnect with the godliness beyond us. And the godliness beyond us is actually yearning to connect with the godliness within us. So then what separates us? What separates this spark of godliness from the all-embracing, all-encompassing godliness? It's the worlds. The worlds. God has hidden himself from us. And each world is a graduating, increased hiddenness, until we get into this world whereby we begin to almost believe that maybe there isn't a God. Maybe there's just us. Maybe there's nobody. Maybe we're in a world of absolute multiplicity, plurality, and there really isn't a oneness. But those of us who understand that the oneness is hidden, and if you have the courage to go to that country, that city, that building, to continue to move forward to find Hashem. And so, you know, what does hiddenness really mean? When I'm hiding from you, what does it really mean? It means I'm right here. You just don't see me. That's what it means. I'm hiding from you. Hiding means that your vision is partial. If you take another angle, you'll see me. I'm actually right here all along. But I'm hiding from you. This is a basic idea in Jewish consciousness, that Hashem God is right here. The oneness is right here. But it's hidden. And so what needs to change? Our perception. What needs to change is our perspective. And each world is a graduating new perspective, greater perspective, whereby I see more and more how God was here all along. According to the Kabbalah, what we will realize in the future is that we never ever left the Garden of Eden. Not in essence, only in mind. But in essence, we are in the Garden of Eden. We just don't see it. Well, if you don't see it, what good is it? Right? Well, the point is this. The point is that, and Rav Kook talks about this, redemption is what we would refer to as an epistemological redemption. What needs to change is our way of viewing. What needs to change is how great a perspective we get. You know, some people have zoom lenses and some people have wide-angle lenses. You know? If you're a zoom lens kind of person, you see all the details. But you don't see those details within the greater picture. If you're a wide-angle person, well, then you see the great picture, but sometimes you don't really see the details. Well, the goal of life is to be able to have both zoom and wide-angle at the same time. To get the most all-encompassing picture without losing clarity of the details. But it's all a function of changing the way we see the world. The way we see ourselves. Now, I don't know if I once mentioned it to you. A number of years ago, I was sitting there, I gave my kids some Cheerios. And it said on this Cheerios box that on the back of this box is a three-dimensional Cheerios bumblebee. And I said, well, what does that mean? So I looked at the back, and it just looked like this distorted thing. And I've never ever seen these three-dimensional books. Have you ever had a chance to look at the three-dimensional books? And so there's a certain way that you have to view it. If you look at it the way you normally look at anything else, you don't see anything but a mishmash. Looks like a distortion. But what it says is, put the Cheerio box up to your nose and slowly move it away from your face. Well, I'm sitting there waiting for the kids to finish their Cheerios. And I go, why not? So I put the Cheerios up to my nose and I start slowly moving it away from my eyes. And I'm not getting it. Well, I notice one of my kids kicking the other kid under the table. Like, Abba's gone meshuga. We knew he was studying Kabbalah or something. But this is crazy. What's he doing? Why does he just eat the Cheerios and start instead of trying to stuff it in his nose? So anyways, well, I wasn't going to give up because it says there's a three-dimensional bumblebee on the pack of this. And listen, I mean, I paid for this Cheerios. I want to get my full experience. And so I put the Cheerio box up to my nose. I slowly pull it away and I go, oh my gosh! And then the kids ran away from the table. Anyways, needless to say, we no longer buy Cheerios. The kids don't eat Cheerios. They're afraid it might affect them too. The point is that here is an incredible example. And there's a tremendous amount of mussar in this Cheerio box. The way you see things really determines the way it looks to you. And so much of the world that we see has to do with the way we see it. There's an amazing piece in the Zohar that when Jacob was on his way to Egypt, Hashem says to Jacob, don't worry, Joseph will close your eyes. Well, now I don't. I'm fine now. The Zohar says, what does this mean? The Zohar says that when a person passes away, then the halakha, according to Jewish law, you have to close their eyes. Someone has to close your eyes. So can you imagine Jacob was told, don't worry, when you get to Egypt, you're going to pass away. But Joseph will be the one that will close your eyes. The Zohar asks, the Zohar, one of the most important sources of Kabbalistic tradition in Judaism, says, or asks, why is it that we have to close the eyes of the deceased? The Zohar says, because the colors, the texture, the shapes of this world are in your eyes. And to see the next world, someone has to close your eyes. Very interesting idea. How much of the world do we see is the world as it is, or the way it appears to us. This is basically what's referred to in that redemptive sentence, that in that day, in that ultimate redemptive day, God will be one and His name will be one. Now, what does it mean that God will be one and His name will be one? Well, God is always one, but obviously His name isn't always one. In order to understand this, I think we can borrow a concept or some terminology from Kant. Immanuel Kant asked this basic question. Is the world that we see the world as it is? Or do we see the world as we see it? And therefore he says there's really two realities. There's noumena, which is the thing in itself, reality, let's call it. And then there's phenomena, which is how you see that, how you understand that. So there's noumena and there's phenomena. Now let's go back to the four worlds. There's the world of action, formation, and creation. These would be referred to as the world of phenomena. This is the world as it looks to us. Noumena, the world as it is the world of atzilut, the world of emanation. So you have the world as it is, so to speak, and then there's the world as it appears to us based on our limited viewing, based on our partial perspective. And as we ascend higher and higher and get a greater, more broader perspective, we come closer and closer to reveal that which is hidden. Do you follow this? Okay. God is one, but His name is not one. The oneness of God is, and it always was, and it always will be. But the name is not yet one. We don't see it. We're not yet able with our minds and with our eyes to completely describe this oneness. In fact, that's one of the reasons why when we say the Shema, and we are basically testifying to God's oneness, what do? We close our eyes. What are we saying? We're saying, we realize we don't see this oneness. We realize we don't see this oneness. But we realize that one day we will see this oneness. But how will we see this oneness? It's a matter of evolving in consciousness. Evolving to a place where we get greater and more broader perspective. And then in the broadest perspective, all of a sudden we'll realize where we've been all along. And so, where were these four rabbis going? These four rabbis were traveling through these worlds. But what are these worlds? You know, sometimes you have a person, you feel, oh man, this person is worlds apart from me. How can someone be worlds apart from you? They really are. Because the world that you live in is not the same world that I live in. Because the way I see the world and the way you see the world is different. There's certain things that we share, I'm sure. But there's certain things that are absolutely unique to you and to me. And we participate in creating the world. How do we participate in creating the world? We create the world we live in based on the interpretation that we bring to this world. Do you follow this? This is a very important idea. Friday night, we say Kiddush. We are told that all who say Kiddush Friday night become a partner to creation of the world. That's a very strange thing because essentially what are we saying in the Kiddush? We're saying, God, you've created the world. How do I become a partner to a world that God has already created? Do you follow that? If I say, and I bear testimony to God's world, God's creation, I become a partner of creation. How can I become a partner of creation? God creates the world. But I contribute to how that world's going to look, based on the way I'm going to look at it. And so we also become partners of the creation world by what we bring to the world through the way we see the world, the way we interpret the world. And as we're growing up, we need to come up with deeper, broader interpretations of the world. And then, in fact, we are in a different world. So, according to Kabbalah, the ultimate reality is oneness. But that oneness is hidden to us. And in the world that we live in, we don't see that oneness. We see multiplicity. Now, I have to tell you just a few quick words about God's oneness. It's not the way you understand oneness and the way I understand oneness. But it's important to understand that the oneness of God is not like the oneness in our dictionary. It's not like the number one. The oneness of God is a oneness that includes multiplicity while remaining one. It's a mysterious oneness. Next week I'll talk about it and you'll understand it much better. But it's important to understand that when God's oneness is concealed, we end up seeing only the manyness. We don't see the oneness in the many. We don't see how the many are in the one. We only see the many. And we think there's no oneness within it and around it. And so, as we're ascending these worlds, and as these rabbis are ascending these worlds, they're uncovering more and more of God's oneness. Now, in order to illustrate this so you can understand a little better what it is that we're talking about, what I'm basically going to draw on the board, what do you see on the board? Four dots. And from your perspective, they are absolutely four separate dots. Now I tell you, I know they look like four separate dots, but they really are not four separate dots. You say, Rabbi, I'm telling you, I see four separate dots. I'm going to show you that they're actually not four separate dots, but really only a partial picture. Because really these are two circles. And what I only drew for you was one dimension of two circles. If I were to give you glasses and diminish your vision, right? How many dimensions do you see right now? You're able to see, people are wondering, this is a quick question, am I going to look dumb?
That's right, thank you very much, Joe. Three dimensions, very good.
Okay, we see three dimensions. What if I were to give you glasses, which would somehow narrow your vision, and you were only able to see one dimension? And you now look at this board, which has two circles. What would you see of those circles if you could only see one dimension? You could only see four dots. Only what I can draw a line through is what you would see. A line is one dimension. So you could only see that which one line would go through. Do you follow this? Okay. So you thought you saw four dots. I tell you it's not four dots. It's really only a partial picture of two circles. But now I tell you, they're not really two circles. I know it looks like two circles. It's not really two circles. So you say, well, what is it? I say, it's actually really a big donut. And that really, I have damaged your vision so you could only see two dimensions of a donut. Now think about this. If I gave you glasses, which would eliminate one dimension, you can only see two dimensions. You walked around this room and you were only able to see two dimensions. You can only see that which a plane could cut across, not an airplane, right? And so, what do you see when you slice this donut with the two dimensions that you're able to see? What would you see? Two circles. I tell you they're not two circles. I tell you they're really unified. There's a oneness. You say, there's no oneness, there's two circles, Rabbi. I say, no, really, I only drew a partial picture of a donut. And I remember when I went to the States, we in Los Angeles, took my kids out, and I said, hey, let's buy them a donut. They'd never seen a donut or an American donut. And so my son got the donut and says, Abba, there's something wrong with this donut. I said, what's wrong? There's a hole in it. So I said, what do you mean there's a hole in it? What's wrong with the hole? He says, Abba, there's a hole in this donut. Right? I explained to him that that's why we pay so much for it. It's the hole that you pay the money for. Okay? So imagine if I were now to give you glasses which took you past the third dimension and the fourth dimension, I tell you, there's no holes in donuts. Okay? And you're being ripped off. Anyways, the point is this. The way we see the world is a function of our limited perception. According to science, there really are no longer three dimensions. There's no such thing as three dimensions. It's your mind and my mind that enables us, not only enables us, is actually limiting our ability to see the world as it is, because you're only seeing three dimensions. Scientists are now claiming there are 26 dimensions to reality. We're only seeing three of them, right? Now, 2 weeks from now, we're going to talk about Purim, and I'll tell you how you can see a few more, right? But you got to bring your own. Okay, you bring your own. All right. This is the journey of these four rabbis into higher consciousness, enabling to see the oneness that includes multiplicity while remaining one. The one in the many, the many in the one. While we're in this world, we only see the manyness. And there doesn't seem to be any oneness. As we go higher and higher into higher levels of consciousness, being able to see reality as it really truly is, we begin to see more and more the oneness that permeates all this multiplicity. And yet still are able to realize this multiplicity within this simple oneness. And so let's go back to our journey. The journey of these four rabbis. Where were they going? According to the Ari, the rabbis were working their way from the world of action, where you and I are, to the world of creation. How do you go in this journey? I'm not quite sure, but this was not a physical journey. This was a meditative journey. And what is it that they wanted to see? The Arizal tells us that they wanted to see what the Torah looks like from the perspective of the world of creation. They wanted to see the first luchot, the first tablets that Moses brought, indicating to us that at Sinai, the Jewish people had an incredible leap up the ladder of consciousness, whereby the way the world looks is not the way you and I see it. And Moshe was bringing the tablets. But the tablets, the Torah, the mitzvot, the way they look from the perspective of the world of creation. Do you follow this? This Torah that Moses was bringing, these first luchot that he needed to break because there was some kind of consciousness collapse, was the Torah of the first man, the Ari teaches us. Because according to our tradition, the first man also had Torah. But now here comes the problem. Ben Azai, Ben Zuma, Acher, and Rabbi Akiva have decided they want to see the Torah from a different perspective, from a higher perspective. What will the Torah look like? So Rabbi Akiva said, when we get to the pure marble, what's the pure marble? So the Ari says he was hinting to them. In Hebrew, it's referred to as the Sheish HaTohor. What does Sheish mean? Sheish means marble, but also means six. The first tablets, we are told, were 6 cubits high. And what is the Torah they want to see? The pure six. Because remember, Moshe later on brings us the Torah again? But this is the Torah, but Torah that is carved out of stone that he brought from this world. These rabbis wanted to see the Torah from the perspective, from the level of consciousness called the world of creation. Rabbi Akiva warned them that when we get to the pure six, when we succeed in seeing the Torah from the light, in the light of the consciousness called the world of creation, don't say water, water. Now everybody knows that one of the basic symbols of the Torah is water, correct? Torah is referred to as water. So why not say water, water? Because when you get to the world of creation and see the Torah in that light, it will look so different than the Torah we have today. It will look so incredibly different from the Torah we have today that it's very likely that we would say, water, water. There are two Torahs. Do you follow? There must be two Torahs. Because they seem to even contradict each other. What's written in the Torah of creation and what's written in the Torah of action where you and I are right now is so different that we would conclude these must be two different Torahs. And so one rabbi died. He couldn't go back to this world. Once he saw the way the Torah looked in the world of creation, he couldn't come back. He could not come back to the way the Torah is now, the way he understood it before. Another rabbi went crazy. It was too paradoxical. It was too contradictory. How is it possible that the Torah in the world of creation looks so completely different? Achir, on the other hand, became a heretic. He said, that's it. I don't need the Torah of the world of action. When I come back off this trip, I'm beyond it all. The Gemara says that Achir was riding his horse in Shabbat. His student Rebbe Meir, who's one of the greatest Talmudists, still hung around him because he said, I still can learn something from him even though he's a heretic. And it was on Shabbat, and Achir is on his horse on Shabbat. They get to the city limits. And according to Judaism, according to Torah and Halakha, there's a certain limit that you can go on Shabbat, and you can't go past that. Well, Achir, on his horse, on Shabbat, and Rebbe Meir walking beside him, Rebbe Meir says, this is it. This is the city limit. Don't go past the borders. And Achir says, I'm past that. Only Rebbe Akiva was able to accept the paradox. Only Rebbe Akiva was able to understand that the real Torah is not in the world of action. It's not in the world of formation. It's not even the world of creation. The real Torah and the ultimate Torah is in the world of emanation. And all these other worlds are various partial perspectives of this one Torah. It's like the famous story about five blind men or blindfolded men who are holding on to an elephant. And one fellow says an elephant is long and lanky and he's holding on to the tail. And another man is holding on to the trunk and he's saying, no, no, no. An elephant is kind of like a thick hose. And then what are you talking about? The other guy says, no, an elephant is fat and stocky. He's holding on to the leg. Different partial perspectives of the one truth. We are taught that now, according to Jewish law, we generally go according to the opinion of Hillel. But in the future, we will go according to the opinion of Shammai. And one would ask, well, I mean, make up your mind. Is Hillel correct? Or is Shammai correct? They're both correct. But it depends what world you're in, which is most applicable to you. In the world and the level of consciousness that we're in right now, we go according to Hillel. In the world, according to the consciousness we achieve later on, we'll go according to Shammai. The truth is, they are two perspectives of one whole situation. What is it that Rebbe Akiva understood? Why didn't he get damaged? Because the Talmud says that Rebbe Akiva entered in peace, and therefore he exited with peace. He knew the secret of peace. What is the secret of peace? Peace is not when everybody agrees. There's no such thing, everyone will agree. Because we all have different perspectives of one reality. Peace is the ability to realize that all the various perspectives are really partial perspectives of a whole picture. Of a whole picture. Rav Kook once said that there's a great mistake for a person to think that one party, one political party, has the answer, and their way of seeing things is the only way. There's no such thing. There are many ways to see it, and the truth is the sum, or greater than the sum, of all those parts. Klal Yisrael, as a klal, as a collective, have so many different opinions, because really these are different partial perspectives. We're worlds apart, looking at an ultimate reality. And what we need to be able to do is know the secret of peace. That ultimate peace can include two ideas which seem to be contradictory. But from a higher perspective, we'll realize they weren't contradictory. They weren't four opinions. They weren't even two opinions. They were somehow different perspectives of one complete whole. This is the journey. This is the journey you're on. This is the journey I'm on. According to the Kabbalah and Torah, Hashem has hidden himself, hidden his oneness. His oneness is not like the oneness we generally know. This is a mysterious oneness, a oneness that includes multiplicity while staying one. strange kind of oneness. A oneness that includes manyness, one in the many, many in the one. God hides his oneness, and we seem to see only manyness. As we ascend the world, we uncover a little bit more of that oneness within the many, and begin to realize how the many are within the oneness. And this is the journey in our lives. The journey in our lives is to be able to uncover that oneness, realize that even when there are contradictory opinions, even when there are contradictory opinions in the interpretation of Torah, Torah is not in a state of contradiction, but rather these are two valid perspectives of one Torah that we will understand how it somehow connects when we reach a higher perspective.
This presentation by Rabbi David Aaron has been brought to you by Israelite, inspiring a renaissance in Jewish living. To access additional presentations from our online media library, order our best-selling books, or learn more about Israelite programming, including seminars, web-based learning, teleconferences, spiritual retreats, Shabbaton experiences, Israel missions, and leadership training, please visit us at www.israelite.org. That's www.israelight.org. You can also call us in New York at 212-947-4990, or in Jerusalem at country code 972-2-627-4890. We hope you enjoyed this presentation, and we look forward to learning with you at Israelite.